Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of the Under 40 Victims of Fate podcast. Adam here with you. There's Hank. Hank, man, it's been a rainy, cold, just rough, raw week.
No doubt. I'll tell you what, we have it a lot better than a lot of people right now. I'm here in, well, Belmont, North Carolina, suburb of Charlotte, but sitting here in downtown Belmont, and it at least it is not snowing and icing right now. It's raining. My dog hates going out. It's freezing. I don't like it when it's below about 62, but here we are. We're making it. But we got it a lot better than a lot of people.
Yeah, I guess all things considered, we're pretty blessed, but I'm like you. Even 60 is a little cold for me. We I guess that fits the mold for being host of a Jimmy Buffett podcast. But man, pretty exciting episode today.
No doubt about it. Very exciting episode. We'll bring our guests in a little bit sooner than we usually do. I usually tell folks, my new 5-month-old or my wife or somebody's the star of the show. But this time, the star of the show, we are really, really fortunate, unbelievably lucky to have Brendan Mayer with us tonight. Brendan, how are you?
I'm doing great. How about you guys? It's good to be with you.
Good man, doing well. Now, where are you, Brendan? Are you out of the snow and ice right now?
I'm in Nashville, Tennessee, and it's pretty gnarly here by Nashville standards. We're not used to a whole lot of snow and ice and cold, but I gotta say, we're pretty lucky in comparison with a lot of the other parts of the country, especially Texas. Want to send a lot of love and care out to them right now. I know folks are really struggling. We got power and we got heat, so we're doing okay in my book.
Right on, man. Glad to hear it. Glad to hear it. Speaking of cold in Nashville, Brendan, I don't know if you're around Nashville or would remember this. It might have been 3 years ago now. Potentially the coldest I've ever been in my entire life was New Year's Eve Jimmy Buffett concert in Nashville. I don't know if you were at or around that show, but it was quite literally 3 degrees out that night. I don't know if you remember that.
I was there. I was there with my girlfriend, and I think that was the first Jimmy Buffett show I ever took her to. So she saw the full spectacle, and that was a night to remember. I remember it being a ton of fun, but it was cold, and like, of course, it's New Year's Eve, so afterwards everyone wants to hang out and have a good time. And I think most folks just called it a night after the
Oh
gig
yeah.
because no one could deal with the cold. I think there were like two people associated with the band who were having a good time and wanted to keep it rolling all night. And then everyone else was like, it's cold, we're going to
Oh, that's good stuff. Good stuff. So, based in Nashville, and I know Adam's got all kinds of questions. Adam is musically unbelievably well-rounded. So I know he's got all kinds of questions, excited,
Awesome.
and he's a fellow musician too. He probably is excited to talk musician to musician with you. Turns out
Sure.
it's harder to say musician to musician than I thought it was.
Yeah.
But he wants to chat with you, I'm sure, about some of that. But you're playing a little bit in Nashville, catch you on Facebook once in a while. So are you playing live shows right now? How's that going?
Man, they've been few and far between right now, unfortunately. But it's just kind of the way it is right now for nearly everyone in the business. We have done a couple gigs. I've done some solo things, a couple with my dad, Peter Mayer. We've done a couple duo gigs, but it's mostly gone over to live internet streaming at this point. In fact, it's not exactly live, but we went into a studio last November and filmed a bunch of songs recorded in a really nice environment where we got real hi-fi audio. So we're actually getting ready to do to release that whole production. But again, it's weird because it's like a pre-recorded thing that you work on and is in the can, and then you put it out there. Totally different from what we're used to, being in a true live environment where you can react with fans real time, which is part of the magic.
Right.
Yeah, I can only imagine just how different and how difficult it's been for so many musicians to adjust in what is just obviously an unprecedented time. Hank probably gave me a little too much credit there, calling me a talented
I
musician. I can play a few instruments and I like to write a few
love
songs,
it,
you know.
man.
But anyway, before before I dive too deep into the musical side of it, I know you're from St. Louis.
Yeah.
So obviously I'm not from St. Louis. I'm from North Carolina, but is it safe to assume you're a Cardinal fan?
Yes, sir. Yeah. My first sports love. Yeah. I remember growing up in St. Louis City, like, you know, Fred Bird, the mascot, would come do block parties and stuff and hand out baseball cards. So my parents are not sports people at all. My dad I never saw him put on a sports game in any league when I was growing up. And I kind of forced him into it with me and made him get into it. But the Cardinals were my first love on that, man. And still to this day, I'm excited about this season. So I'm glad to meet a fellow fan, it sounds like.
Yeah, so for whatever I think I had a plastic Martin McGuire bat growing up, and I was like, who's that guy play for? And when I found that out, I was like, okay, that's my team. And I think Yadier Molina was still maybe the catcher, but so excited that they're bringing Yachty back for one more year. And for once, the Cards made a really big offseason move getting Arenado.
It's huge. Yeah. Actually, one of my like favorite childhood memories, still have this glove, was I went down to Busch Stadium with my uncle during McGuire's record-breaking season. And you jump in at batting practice and just shove your item out to try to get it signed. And he chose me, and I got Mark McGuire's autograph on that glove. And nice. That was the coolest thing that ever happened to me as a kid. You know, I was like, who cares about all these musicians that I get to hang out with? I want to hang with Mark McGuire.
Yeah, that's amazing, man. So I just had to lead with that because, not many Cardinal fans around here. They're either Atlanta Braves or Yankees or Nationals or just not many Card fans around here. So obviously had to lead with that. And I guess shifting a little more into the music side of it now, obviously you grew up with your dad and uncle being a very big part of one of the most successful touring bands ever. What in the world was that like?
Oh boy, where to begin? It was an experience.
We got plenty of time, so don't
worry. Great. Well, it's I feel so privileged to have had this be a part of literally my entire life. My dad started in 1989, the year I was born. I think my mom was just a couple months away from having me the first summer when I was Jimmy. So it has quite literally been a life. It's just always been there. I mean, it's pretty insane to think about. And side note, this is the first year my entire life that Jimmy hasn't toured. I mean, and I know we all have stories like that about what this pandemic has done to our routines and stuff. But sometimes I'm like, wow, this year really was insane. You know, 30 out of 31 years, Jimmy's been doing summer shows that we'd go to, you know, countless of them over the years. So it was awesome. It was overwhelming at times as a kid. You know, I remember my mom she was awesome and would take us to a lot of the shows, but you know, we'd watch them from backstage because I guess she thought that the crowd might be a little too crazy to expose, you know, 6-year-olds to. And we'd sit backstage and she'd always make us wear earplugs and stuff, but it was incredible. And I grew up with all those cool people as like my aunts and uncles, and it was like an extended family. That's one amazing thing about the, you know, Jimmy and the Reefers is that it's really a tight knit group. Like they all genuinely care about each other.
Yeah. They seem so undeniably, authentically like the greatest, sweetest people on earth.
It's true. What you see is what you get. And for Jimmy as well. I mean, they're really authentic, and I got to think that must be some small part of the success that Jimmy's had over the years is just authenticity. And, you know, he's a really loyal guy too. And it's rare that you see that little turnover in a rock and roll band, you know, unless you got founded, you know, you're a founding member like a U2 or Rolling Stones. It's really rare that a touring band is the same as the studio band, and then they stick with those people for 35, 40, 45 years, whatever.
That's a good point. You know, it's one we haven't, really talked about, you know, I guess on our podcast yet. And Brendan, it sounds like you know the name of the podcast, Under 40 Victim of Fate.
So, yeah.
Right. The whole premise. There are a lot of us, unfortunately, man, under 40, like we all are, that are big Jimmy Buffett fans. Right. And man, we missed a lot of the stuff, but sounds like you got a great seat for a long time. I bitched about a couple of weeks ago, not being able to go when I was a kid. And I, you know, I always thought like, my parents didn't want me around the crowd and that kind of thing, but it turns out like they didn't want the responsibility of looking after their child at the concert. So never got to go, man. I had to be able to buy my own ticket and get myself there. But
isn't that a good point? Yeah. I think that's very fair. And now looking back on it, sometimes when I think about shows that my dad didn't have the family come out to, it probably had more to do with him wanting to have a good time.
Yeah. Hey, don't bring the kids to the Vegas show.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I never did go to Vegas until I was 18. So there might be something in that.
That's great. And you've had the chance, I think, to play a little bit with that group. How was that?
Man, it was awesome. The first time was in 2014. So I would have been kind of just out of college and starting up my own music career in earnest at that point. And Jimmy heard a couple of songs I had written, and he was incredibly gracious and called me up and said, "Hey, I really like what you do. How's about you come out on tour with us?" And I said, "Oh, are you kidding me?"
Yeah.
Like it was really a surreal experience getting to be up there every night. And, you know, more than just getting to play in front of 20,000 people a night, which is insane. It was doing that with all these people who I know and love and had looked up to my entire life. So it was just, it was everything you could imagine and more, and I'll never forget it, you know? And then a few years later, Mac McAnally was unfortunately not able to make it to Europe for a couple of the Paris shows. So I got to do a very poor imitation of Mac for a few days with Jimmy. Yeah.
You know, I don't know if you can call it a favor or not when somebody says, "I need you to stand in for Mac McAnally."
Yeah, that's right.
What a tall task, you know.
Those are very big shoes that you do not want to try to step into.
Right, no doubt. And I'll tell you, we laughed about it last week. So a few weeks ago, we had some other under 40 victims of fate. I'm 35, Adam's in his 20s. Mm-hmm. They were also in their 20s. So I was the oldest guy on the podcast. And I was like, we need some underachievers. You know, like Adam and I had that conversation. And then he's like, "Hey, I got this friend. He's a huge fan, really wants to come on the podcast." So it came on. He was fantastic. We were supposed to be getting underachievers, and this guy shows up and he's got like unbelievable hair. He's a scratch golfer. And I'm like, all right, whatever. Like maybe next week. Right. And now this week, our guest is talking about playing music with Jimmy Buffett and is in fact a professional musician. So Adam, maybe next week, man, we'll get somebody. If you're not talented, if you want to be on the show and you're not talented, this would be the week to hit us up.
Well, man, why don't you talk about, obviously, I'm sure growing up, a child of the Coral Reefer Band, if you will, they were big influences on you musically, but who are some others?
Well, you know, I really loved Jimmy's music a whole lot when I was a little kid, and it was kind of funny because we weren't really allowed to listen to Jimmy's music when my dad got home, because my mom told us, you know, your dad's been out with him for 3 months playing these songs every single night, and his ears are probably going to need a break. He's going to want to listen to some other stuff for a little bit. And this is his job. So we got in a lot of our Buffett time when he was on the road. And it was also awesome because it allowed us to stay connected to him, hearing him play on these records, you know, when he's not physically with you.
That's really cool. Yeah.
But once I hit, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9 years old, you know, like we all do, we start wanting to differentiate ourselves from our parents a little bit. And so I got into, you know, probably a lot of the pop stuff of the time that they hated. And then I developed into new directions that I think they liked a little bit more, but that they maybe didn't know as much about. Like, I'm a huge Radiohead fan. Like, that's one of my all-time favorite bands. I went through a big classic rock phase, went through a big rap phase. A lot of stuff that my parents just didn't listen to, didn't expose me to, but it was just like any of us, you know, we develop our own musical tastes and start getting exposed to all sorts of different things. So yeah, Beatles, of course, though, that was a big one that my dad played a lot for us, James Taylor. It's funny, as I get older, I've come back around to a lot of the early stuff that my dad played for me, you know, a lot of the classic singer-songwriter stuff, a lot of the 60s, 70s singer-songwriters, Jackson Browne, I love now, and I never listened to him as a kid. The Eagles, I never really listened to. I love that stuff now. So, you know, it all kind of comes full circle.
Tell us about, Brendan, you have an album out, Long Story Short.
Yeah.
Which is really, really cool. And you mentioned those classic, kind of classic rock and rollers. And you mentioned James Taylor, maybe? Or maybe I invented that in my head. Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's great.
Talking to a couple of North Carolina guys here. So the version of Copperline on that album is absolutely incredible. And I love it. I love it. But talk to us a little bit about that album. What it's like making an album like that and making it with your dad a lot and that kind of thing.
Yeah. Thank you. Well, you know, my dad and I have been playing music together for a long, long time. Even if it was informal, starting out when I was a little kid and through my teen years, when I started writing songs on my own, that was usually with other people my own age, but we always loved singing together and we always loved playing together. And when I got out of college, he was kind of the first one to give me a job. You know, after I decided I wanted to do music full time, he said, well, okay, you know, you learn these songs, you can come out with me and back me up on some of my stuff. And that just really progressed over the next few years. So by the time I think that we did that in 2017, long story short, we had kind of developed this repertoire of songs that we had been playing out either in a full band setting or just as a duo, two voices. And that album initially started out, the idea was, this is just going to be a duo record and, you know, kind of a Simon and Garfunkel light sort of approach where we would focus a lot on two-part harmony and we would do a couple covers and we would write some brand new originals and kind of put the whole thing together. The album kind of grew into something much bigger than that, where we ended up using a bunch of other musician friends to flesh out the sound. My uncle Jim is on it on bass, Eric Darkin, Mac, a lot of the reefers ended up on that album.
Uncle Jim looking Roger like Booth. One of the happiest guys in the world, by the way.
Yeah, yes, sir. And it's, again, all true. So we decided to do that record and it was awesome making it. It was really, really fun. And when it came down to choosing that track list, we knew Copperline had to be on there. Like I said, huge James Taylor fans. And that there's something about that song that is just, it's just magical. You know, talk about storytelling, and I can only imagine for you guys being from North Carolina, you probably really understand what he's talking about in those lyrics more than we do, but that was a fun one to do. And I'll tell a quick story about recording that song. Everything else on that record was all done in a studio, you know, kind of isolated from each other, where we laid down parts and did a lot of overdubs. That song, we were just weren't getting the vibe we wanted. We wanted it to just feel real breezy and light and simple and organic. And so what we ended up doing is going into my parents' house where I grew up and opening all the doors and windows and just setting up a mic in the middle of the room. And we just kind of stood next to each other and just played, kind of like we would, you know, for a concert for my mom or something. And you can kind of hear birds chirping in the background if you listen closely. And I think a Southwest jet going above us as we recorded it. But we ended up using that take. And so that song, Copperline, is really a special one to me.
I'm going to listen for it tonight for sure when I listen to that.
Yeah, Brandon, you guys slayed that. And honestly, the whole album is just, it's funny you say you're trying to get that vibe on that song, because I was telling Hank, the whole record, man, is just so smooth. But going back to you talking about getting more into the Eagles, obviously James Taylor, Jackson Browne, the Floating Collective, what you've kind of got going on now with Aaron and Mick, it seems super Laurel Canyon inspired. And I'll just tell you, I'm probably one of your biggest fans already. I listened to On the Run at a minimum of once a day. I just love that sound and love the song. And man, I'm sure you guys felt this a little bit when you were writing it and recording it, but just like being so captive right now with the quarantining and all that, we would love to all kind of be on the run a little bit, right?
Yes, sir. Well, first of all, I'm really glad you liked the song. It was a real labor of love, and man, it's been so much fun working with those guys. I've known them for years, you know, growing up on the road, and you know, we didn't all show up at the same Buffett concerts at the same time. So it wasn't like we were hanging out all the time, but always knew them and loved hanging with them. You know, years go by, we all end up in Nashville, all end up in the music industry doing our own thing. And boy, it's just, it's one of those serendipitous groups or happenings that really could have only happened, only come out of this pandemic. In a normal year, we would have all been doing our own separate things and probably not had the time or desire to dig into a new band. But we were all kind of stuck in Nashville together, and we decided let's see what happens. Let's write some original songs. And Jimmy and his team heard about it and loved the idea, and it kind of just developed, you know. And On the Run was the first idea we had, and we thought, you know, I bet there's some other people out in the world feeling this way right now, like who want to be thinking about a travel song, who, you know, reminiscing on journeys they've had in their lives and looking forward to that chance to do it again, to chase something around the world again when we're able to. So that was so much fun. And as far as the sound goes, absolutely. You hit it right on the head, man. The Laurel Canyon thing was very intentional. Throughout my career, I've always kind of been all over the place. As a songwriter, I have never quite been able to settle on a genre. So this one has really been fun because we decided going in, we're going to do something pretty straightforward. And when people hear the name Floating Collective, we kind of want it to be associated with a certain sound. So that's what we're doing. And you'll hear, we've got a bunch of other songs in the pipeline that should be out later this year, but you know, we've got some ballads and stuff as well, but they're all going to have that classic Cali Laurel Canyon 70s, late 60s vibe. So glad that comes through.
That's great to hear. And that's actually what my next question was going to be, is kind of what's next for that group. You said you got some stuff coming along, you know, maybe for later in the year, but are you looking at maybe making like a full record, or is it maybe just like an EP, or is that TBD?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think the plan right now is to start with an EP by hopefully early midsummer. I think we should have enough material recorded and ready to go for that. And beyond that, who knows? I mean, I don't think any of us thought this would really turn into what it's becoming, but we love playing together, and we're starting to get, you know, interest about playing live and offers to come do some various gigs around the country. So as soon as we're able to get out and play, it looks like we're going to be doing some Floating Collective shows together.
Brendan, what's kind of the, you mentioned getting out and playing, and it sounds like kind of the mantra was there, if it's fun, let's keep doing it. Coincidentally enough, yeah, that's how I convinced my wife so many years ago to start accompanying me to a ton of Jimmy Buffett shows. But what what's the sense in the industry, man? I know you guys are itching, you know, guys and girls. I use guys as a collective, but all you music industry folks are itching to get back on the road, right? And what's your sense in the industry, man, for, you know, as folks get maybe more vaccines? I mean, is that something you all are, is there a proverbial light at the end of the tunnel for you all, or are you still kind of in wait and see mode?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think first of all, yes, we see light at the end of the tunnel. Especially it feels like in the past couple weeks, even you just can kind of, talking to people, sense more optimism. Friends who work in the industry are getting back to work. Not everyone, you know, it's not like it's all fixed yet, but it feels like people they can see something coming, a point where it is safe again and people feel comfortable. We're ready to rock, man. It's been so weird not having that, first of all, that outlet for artistic expression, but you know, this is how, anymore, the way that the record industry has changed in terms of album sales, this is how most musicians make their living now, is live performance rather than selling some sort of physical product.
Right.
So I've been so fortunate, you know, to be able to keep playing music this year, and you find ways to get it out there still. But at, I know a lot of people who have gone, had to get other jobs and stuff. And it's, that's been the hardest part to see. You know, you'll hear these really tragic stories about, you know, people having to sell their prized instrument to get by and kind of give up the dream. But I've been so fortunate to be able to keep playing and supported by a ton of people. And we're coming back. We're coming back soon. I don't think anyone knows exactly, you know, what date we'll be able to say we're good again. But sure, what I can tell you this, I think that you're going to see a slow upward trajectory throughout this spring and summer. I think you're going to see more and more people being able to go to these shows, you know, starting out at somewhat limited capacity still. But I hope, and I know a lot of people feel the same way, my hope is that by fall, early winter, you know, we're ready to be playing kind of right back to normal somewhat.
Right. I'll tell you what, I want live music so bad. Don't get pissed if I come knock on your door and just hang in your living room and like,
there you go. Hey, you know, play some you're jam. Welcome anytime.
Bring a couple of beers if you want, and we'll just get after it and I'll listen to you. You know, I'm with you, you know, and as bad as you all want to be out on the road, know that we're anxious to have you back. You know, it's music is such a big part. I mean, obviously, listen, we got a podcast about a specific artist, but essentially it's about music, right? So it's a huge part of a lot of our lives. And man, we miss you all as bad as you miss playing. Maybe I can't say that for sure, cause I'm not on your end of it, but man, we miss you all. And we're excited to have music coming back, hopefully sooner rather than later.
Yes, sir, man. It's mute. The feeling's mutual. And that's part of the most challenging thing of the most challenging part of this, I think, is that the relationship between musician and fan or someone who comes to your concerts is such a special, sacred thing, you know? And I think a lot of artists have been feel a responsibility, you know, someone like Jimmy, who has a fan base that he's built for coming up, you know, 40 to 50 years. I think it's different than just owning a name, owning a store, you know, somewhere throughout the country where you don't know your customers, right? Jimmy, I think, feels a real responsibility to do it safely, to come back, you know, and I think you're seeing that throughout the industry. All these people are like really care about, man, I just would never be able to live myself if I knew that any of my fans were at risk coming to enjoy this beautiful thing that brings us all together, which is music.
Right.
So he wants to do it right. And I think that's how most people feel, but it's going to happen. You know, we're on the way back.
That's obviously great for us to hear and for our listeners to hear, and exactly what everybody wants to hear. And we definitely hope that is the case. And you said, I saw Kip Moore played a show at the Ryman, I think last week,
yeah,
in limited capacity, but everybody did it the right way. You know, people were wearing their mask. Like I said, limited capacity. So it is good to see that slowly but surely creeping back. So I was excited when Hank told me you had agreed to hop on the podcast. But when I sent you a message just to kind of follow up and told you my favorite album was Barometer Soup, and obviously I think your dad was a co-writer on all but maybe two of those songs. Mm-hmm. And I don't, obviously he didn't write Mexico, and I think Jimmy wrote that one by himself, but you said it was your favorite album as well. And we have to bond over that for just a minute. Cause I've been advocating for Barometer Soup to get more love ever since we started this podcast. So man, it is just, when I say like, it is my all time favorite album by any artist. So just if you could maybe talk about any cool stories you've heard or know about that album, or maybe some of your favorite songs from it, just anything. I'm here
absolutely
to geek out over it. So,
well, I'm really glad to hear you say that, perhaps selfishly, because it's, you know, it's the album, I'm biased here, I'll admit it, but that's the album my dad had the most input on, of all Jimmy's records. So this would have been 95, I think, when it came out. So this would have been 6 years into kind of his stint as a reefer that continues to this day. And my understanding, the story of that album is pretty unique, and it's really cool. My dad talks about this a lot. What happened was Jimmy was kind of, I don't want to say he had too much on his plate, but he was kind of multitasking. At the time, he was working on his first foray into Broadway musicals, which was called Don't Stop the Carnival.
Oh, yeah.
With Herman Walk. Okay. And he had agreed to do this with Herman, and which meant writing music and being, and you know, Jimmy is an incredible creative guy. And when he decides to do something, he wants to be personally involved. Like, if you guys paid attention at all to the Escape to Margaritaville play he did a year or two ago, he was all over with that, promoting it himself, showing up at performances and playing Margaritaville every night, you know, and working with the lead, kind of teaching him the tricks of the trade, what it was like to be a bar musician back in those days. So Jimmy was really involved with Don't Stop the Carnival, and he also wanted to do an album that year, a regular Buffett album. So he went to my dad, Roger Guth, longtime drummer for Jimmy, who's also my dad's primary writing partner. They've most of my dad's songs have been written with Roger. Russ Kunkel, famous producer and drummer for James Taylor, actually, throughout the years. And Jay Oliver, a great keyboardist who was the fourth. And he basically said to them, listen, I want to do both these things at the same time, but I just can't do it all on my own. So I'm going to send you guys down to Key West, set up shop at my, they called it the Fish Camp. And I remember really vaguely my dad going down to do this, even though I was only like 5 or 6 years old. My mom was like, your dad's going to be gone for a month. Big opportunity for him. They're going down to Key West and they're going to write this album. And Jimmy gave them basically like homework assignments, like a summer reading list.
Yeah, this and is the coolest thing I've ever heard.
It was like Mark Twain novels. I think, you know, Huck Finn was on there, and short stories by Hemingway and F. Scott Fitzgerald. So
just
a lot of people have pointed out that those song titles, if you look at those song titles, a lot of them share the same name as famous short stories or like lines from Hemingway books and stuff.
So I'm a high school English teacher, and we started reading the short story today, Diamond as Big as the Ritz. So my goal is, I was telling Hank earlier this week, my goal is to eventually only teach Buffett literature and things that inspired Buffett work. So
man, that sounds like a college course to me. Seriously. I mean, yeah, so that's exactly right. So they went down to Key West and had all these books, and they would just underline phrases and titles that they thought they could turn into songs. So they put those pieces together on their own, and then Jimmy came down and they all finished them together, and the rest is history. I love that album. I think it's musically so cool and lyrically so cool. Like songs like Night I Painted the Sky. Is that on that one?
It is. That was cool, man. From the songs You Don't Know by Heart. That was when Jimmy and Delaney did that. That was one where Jimmy was visibly, he missed his buddy at the end of that one. That was really neat, you know?
Yeah. And that was one that I know my dad really got to work hand in hand with Jimmy on. So that was a real special one for him. And Barefoot Children in the Rain.
Which you and your dad do an amazing job on Long Story Short. It's just, talk about breezy, man. Like, it's like you can feel the weather happening around you while you listen to that song. I don't know if that's what you're going for, but it's such a cool sound.
Thank you. That's a really cool song. And that's one of the ones I really latched on to, you know. It was a Buffett cover that I really loved to play when I would do solo shows. And especially given that my dad had a part in writing it, it just seemed like a really good fit for us to kind of pay homage to Jimmy. And we decided to kind of take our own spin on it. And I turned it into a bit of a New Orleans thing, you know, like we work with these great musicians. Chris Walters was the piano player, and he's a New Orleans guy. And he kind of just naturally wanted to go to that, you know, kind of greasy feel that takes you down to that bayou sound. And so I'm really, really thrilled with how that came out. Actually, Jimmy, believe it or not, was supposed to sing my verse on that. He had initially heard about our record and heard that that we were going to do Barefoot. And he was like, oh man, well, I think I'll sing that second verse for you. And I was just going to sing harmony. So selfishly, I'm kind of glad I got to sing it because I love that song. Yeah. But I wouldn't have complained if Jimmy had decided to do it either.
Well, man, back to Barometer real quick, and then I'll let us move on. But Remittance Man is, I argue that it's the most underrated Buffett song there is. And I say, Jimmy took like two pages from Following the Equator by Mark Twain and made the most beautiful composition, 5-minute song, about that character and his struggles. And oh my God, it's one of probably my 5 favorite songs of all time. And it just, I keep going back to, I can't shake the entire album and especially that song.
Well, again, it speaks to the brilliance of what Jimmy does. What a great idea. I mean, to turn to this incredible literature, the master storytellers of our time and throughout American history, right? And to say, we're going to get our inspiration from these guys who know how to tell a story. And then Jimmy able to put his own spin on it and turn it into a song. I mean, that's not easy to do. So I am glad you feel this way. I agree completely. And I do think Barometer Soup deserves a little more respect, like I put some respect on that name. Like I want to hear Barometer Soup songs played more at Buffett shows.
Likewise. I wish they would print it on vinyl, man. It's only on CD. I want it on vinyl, but maybe one day.
I would take some Bank of Bad Habits at a show anytime. That seems like such a great concert song. And I'm yet to hear it.
That was one I loved as a kid. Yeah.
Pizza. That's a fun one.
Yeah.
Right. Now you mentioned Jimmy's storytelling ability, and that's so true, right? Adam and I have talked about on the podcast, so many folks, a lot of folks, I guess, that aren't big musical people will tell you like, oh yeah. The Margaritaville guy. Got it. Sounds good. I'm going to the beach this summer. I'm sure I'll check him out, but he's got some folks that he's friends with that are unbelievable writers and storytellers. And, I think those of us that are big fans, right, and certainly folks like you who've grown up around him and have personal interaction and followed his music and career from a vantage point like you, right, recognize and appreciate the storytelling nature of what it is he does. And that's why we appreciate it, right? I would guess probably some other band members feel the same way. Nadira Shakur has a great album, Nod to the Storyteller Out, that's really neat to hear and cool to hear that, you consume Barometer Soup in that storyteller way and probably some other albums too, if I had to guess.
Yeah. Jimmy he goes a lot deeper than most people know. I remember, just about everyone of my friends knew who Jimmy Buffett was when I was a kid. And, they'd say, oh yeah, okay, your dad's a musician. Who does he play for? I said, oh, Jimmy Buffett. They said, oh, okay. Yep. And had an idea of what that meant. But I tell you what, man, every time I'd take them to a show, because they didn't really get it until they saw what it was. And they saw the full spectrum of what Jimmy offers as a storyteller and entertainer and musician. He just has a way of engaging with the audience, and really you feel like he's talking to you personally. And then he's also got this fun, captivating, rock side where he'll throw in fun covers and get people dancing in the audience. And it is hard to explain to people who don't come from that tradition.
I bet growing up though, with your dad playing in the band, some of your friend might've been kind of, I know who he is, but I bet you were always allowed to spend the night anywhere you wanted, right? Like I bet if hey, the guy whose dad plays with Jimmy Buffett, can he come spend the night? Oh yeah, he could definitely come spend the night. I bet your friend's parents were probably fired up.
The parents knew, they knew who he was for sure. But,
Well, one fun thing we do, Brendan, if you're cool with it, man, hopefully this doesn't put you on the spot. If it does, Adam and I can list ours, but every week we do like 4 Jimmy Buffett songs we're really digging that week. Not necessarily our favorites, because as our listeners have heard us say before, my favorite Jimmy Buffett songs or even album, it changes pretty regularly. And it's a lot more of a conversation than it is a list, which is how probably any musician would prefer to hear their work described. But we usually say, hey, if you're headed to a deserted island, we ask all our guests, and you're going to be there for a week and you could take a cassette with four Jimmy Buffett songs, do you think you could pick out four that you'd take?
It's tough to name four for a desert island because, like you're saying, it would change so much depending on the mood. But if I'm like, if we're talking like the Mount Rushmore of Jimmy Buffett songs.
There you go. That's a great way to put it. We're going to use that from here on out.
Just okay. Well, and that might be a different answer too, because, you know, some of them, like, maybe it wouldn't be the one I personally want to listen to all the time, but you can't deny like the importance of it. And
sure.
But one, I think that like extends to both definitions would be Tin Cup Chalice for me. Like that's one I play a lot as a Buffett cover when I'm not doing shows. I love that song. I love the story of it. To me, it perfectly sums up the Jimmy Buffett ethos. You know, it's pure Jimmy, and his voice sounds awesome on it. That original recording, Jimmy's got a pretty serious vocal range. You know, he can get up a lot higher than people realize.
Right. Not so quite I love Tin Cup Chalice. Get, you know,
well, maybe not that high, but
yeah.
I'm trying to think some of the other ones. I, I'm biased a lot towards like a lot of the albums after my dad joined because he was part of them. And then I heard a lot of them as I was growing up. So like the whole Fruitcakes album, I actually really loved.
Oh yeah.
I'll tell you, if I had to come up with this list as a kid, probably number one would be Cousin in Miami. Everybody's got a cousin in Miami. I loved that song.
Another one that on the surface seems kind of silly, but then has these just brilliant lyrics in it. Like, I am umbilically connected to the temperate zone.
Yeah.
Like, who says that and still makes it sound poetic? Like only Jimmy, right?
Oh, exactly. You know, a lot of the stuff he did, he's written with Mac over the years, man, so good. You know, which one I love, that's a little, maybe not recent. Was it on License to Chill, Coast of Carolina? I love that song.
Fun fact. Speaking to us now.
Yeah. Fun fact there, Brendan, you may enjoy. If you haven't noticed yet, Jimmy Buffett and his music is a bit of a theme that permeates me and my wife's life. And so my parents actually danced to Come Monday. That was their song the whole time. My dad was an old leather worker. And so he'd leave for the craft show Thursday, you know, Wednesday night. They'd drive overnight, get there Thursday, set up, do the craft show Thursday, Friday, Saturday, drive back home Sunday. So Come Monday was always my parents' song. And the story of Coast of Carolina is really neat if you listen to Mac or Jimmy or somebody talk about it. It's the same couple kind of looking back on their love story. And so I think it was probably about 30 years later after Come Monday was my parents' song, my wife and I danced to Coast of Carolina at our wedding. Mm-hmm. So cool. And it's one of my favorites too, man.
That's pretty cool, man. Yeah. I mean, I think Jimmy's described it and Mac too is kind of a sequel of sorts to if you're going to figure out what happened to those people. You know, it would be what they talk about in Coast Carolina. I think the lyrics are just brilliant in that song. The walls that won't come down, you know, that whole phrase is like real incredible lyricism. So I'm going to go with Come Monday because that song, you know, live, even before I was old enough to know what he was singing about, it just hits you. You know, there's something musically with the incredible pedal steel stuff that Doyle plays. It's that beautiful swooning, you know, you feel the emotion of it.
That's so a great as a musician, I have to ask you, I'm sure it does that chord shift as it goes into the bridge.
The modulation there. Yeah.
That just like slaps me in the face.
It's so creative. It's like you don't at all expect him to go there musically, you know, and then he does and it works perfectly.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. Man, that's a great list. I don't think we can argue with any of them. You definitely caught us in the fields with Coast of Carolina I live a little closer to the Coast of Carolina than Hank does, but that's, you know, that's he and his wife's song. Mm-hmm. So really, really cool there. And then I actually was on the Stories We Could Tell podcast last night from with Dan Smith, who runs the Classic Buffett Facebook and Instagram page and everything.
Yeah.
We were talking about a demo that he has, actually the vinyl record of Jimmy demos called the Uncovered Jimmy Buffett. It's like the rarest holy grail of Jimmy Buffett music.
Wow.
And there's a demo of Tin Cup Chalice on there where instead of fill it up with sweet red wine, he says fill it up with apple wine. And for whatever reason, I don't know, being as big of a Jimmy Buffett nerd as we are, it's so strangely satisfying.
That's really cool, man. I'd love to hear that. I've got to ask Jimmy about that at some point. I wonder why change it, if it just sang better, or, you know, because sometimes, like in songwriting, it's as simple as it just sings better. And there's this whole thing, it doesn't, you wouldn't think this is the way it works, but usually, even if the word, you might have a better word choice technically, like by the definition, this makes more sense and says more what I want to say. From my experience, you always got to go with the thing that sings better, because people don't want to get into, you know, dictionary definitions when they're listening to a song. It's more about how do I feel, you know, and even lyrics that don't even make sense. Like, sometimes you can get what the artist is trying to convey just because of how it sounds and makes you feel. So I'd be curious to know about that one.
Yeah. Thanks for adding that little musician tip in there. We appreciate it.
Yeah, it's great to hear about songwriting from like a by God songwriter. Adam, by the way, fantastic songwriter in his own right. Adam, I'll plug you there. But Brendan, it's cool to hear that little kind of behind the scenes look at, man, how a guy who's a pro musician in Nashville writes songs. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Hank and like four other people think I'm a good songwriter. So
thank you. I'd love to hear some of your stuff.
Oh, that would be awesome. We'll have to work that out sometime.
Yeah.
But
absolutely.
Hank, going over to you, man, what four songs are you vibing with this week?
Well, you know, I've been vibing with some covers this week. The late great Johnny Clegg has been probably the top cover I've been rocking, Great Heart. James has a great version of that he did, I think, up in Mansfield, Mass, right before COVID. But Great Heart, I've been rocking that one super loud. Because when it's cold and miserable outside, at least you can, you know, be in the car with the heat on and turn that one way up and really, really enjoy. So Great Heart, I've been killing it this week. A nod to James Taylor. I've been going with Mexico this week too. Great tune. Love it. Jimmy does a great cover of that. So I guess I can't call Brendan. I usually call Jimmy James, his real name, when I refer to him on here, you know, out of respect. But if I'm talking about James Taylor, I got to call him Jimmy to differentiate. So James Taylor does a great song called Mexico, and Jimmy does a fantastic cover of it. And then Southern Cross, which is my wife's one of her favorite songs to rock out to at the concerts. And I've always thought, I remember my wife and I, so I'm scared to fly. I don't love it. I get that it is a weird thing. And I do fly. I just hate it. My wife and I kicked around going to the Paris shows actually in 2016. Didn't go, decided not to make the old transatlantic flight, which I've made a couple times, but didn't feel like at that point. So we didn't go. Looked up one of the, it might have been 2016, maybe it was another year right around there, but I looked up the set list, and I think in a row he played like Southern Cross, One Particular Harbor, Love and Luck, and Scarlet Begonias all right in a row. And I remember telling Tara, like, turns out it wouldn't matter if I died on the way back, you know, like I would have been happy hearing those. So I've been rocking the Southern Cross. Let's see, that's three. I'll say in the spirit of covers, I'll say Scarlet Begonias too, because I love Jimmy's cover. No offense to any of our Deadhead friends. I know this is absolute heresy, but James's cover of Scarlet Begonias, a little bit of a blowout compared to the Dead for my personal music taste. All right. We all got our taste.
I'd agree with you.
You know, my music taste. So those are probably my four, Adam, all covers for me this week.
Yeah, it's a solid list, man. I've been listening to Great Heart a lot too, but my first one for this week off of that same record, Hot Water, that's what living is to me. Another song inspired by Following the Equator, right? From the tribute on the front page, be good and you will be lonesome. So been loving that one lately. Then another shout out to Dan at Stories We Could Tell podcast. He's been trying to get me a little more into Bob Dylan. And I had totally forgotten that Jimmy has a cover of Blowing in the Wind on his Encores album. So I've listened to that a good 20 times in the last 2 or 3 days. Love that. Obviously, just hearing one of the greatest songwriters in the world cover one of the greatest songwriters in the world is really freaking cool. And then talking about good songwriting, man, The Good Fight from Coconut Telegraph is just, man, it's just, we talk about this some on here, how a lyric can so perfectly wrap around a melody, and it just does it in The Good Fight. Probably my favorite song on Coconut Telegraph, if not that, Incommunicado, but that's a story for another time. And then I guess another shout out to your dad, Brandon. He was a co-writer on this one, Mental Floss, actually, a song that I did not give a lot of love to earlier in my Buffett fandom, but another one that on the surface seems kind of silly, and you dive into the lyrics and you're like, holy crap, this is genius. So Mental Floss is my last one, and I've been loving that one lately.
I thought you were going to say Math Sucks for a second, but
And Brendan, if you go listen to episode 2, I'll say this. I'll say Jimmy Buffett and his music is better than most. But if I picked all my favorite Jimmy Buffett songs, Math Sucks may be one of a few that didn't quite hit the list for me at any point. Unfortunately,
a very politic way of saying that.
Well, we agree with sentiment, right? I mean, math does suck.
I hated math.
Math does suck. So, Brandon, again, thank you so much for being with us, man. This has been awesome. I see you got your guitar back there behind.
I do. Yes.
And I don't think we could have you here without asking you to play something. And a Buffett cover would be really cool. Now, if you want that to be Barefoot Children, that would be amazing. Or if there's anything else that you want to play.
We've been talking about it. So why don't I do Barefoot Children here? I love playing this song. Tune it real quick. Toughest thing about this cold, man, is not the toughest. That's not really fair. But one of the challenges of the cold is you got to deal with the fluctuating wood of the guitar, and forced air heat inside the house is not an instrument's best friend. But give it a try here. This is Barefoot Children in the Rain.
Bass drum note, the sound of the weather is heaven's ragtime band. We all came down from the Milky Way, hanging around here to the judgment day. Heaven only knows who's in command. Barefoot children. Now keep your eye from the river boat, fictional. sober fact always has my vote. Wrinkles only go where the smiles have been. Barefoot children in the rain. Got no need to explain. We'd be swinging on a ball and chain. It's always understood those who play the game. Barefoot children. My back with a lightning bolt. Thunder rose like a bass drum note. The sound of the weather is heaven ragtime band. The sky turns blue and the sun appears. But the question still, what are we doing here? I don't think the answer's close at hand. Barefoot children in the rain. Got no need to explain. We'd be swinging on a ball and chain. What's always understood with those who play the game. Barefoot children in the rain. In the rain. In the rain. Oh, in the rain.
Wow.
Standing.
Man, that was absolutely incredible. Thank you so
hopefully
much.
Hopefully it didn't distort too much.
Oh, it was
no,
great.
It sounded great. At least on my end, it did.
It was incredible. No, it sounded perfect to me, man. And I'll tell you, you guys can't see it. It was off camera. But, you know, our listeners can't see Adam's videos off because he lives in the middle of nowhere and has bad internet. So I feel like I was personally serenaded by Brendan Mayer right there. But the closest I've come to live music in so long, and I don't know how long it'll take me to get the smile off my face, man. That was awesome.
Oh, man.
I'm
Thank
just glad
you guys so much.
I'm just glad my video was muted so you couldn't see the tears. So that was good. That was really, really freaking cool, man. Brandon, we cannot thank you enough for being here, man. Why don't you tell our listeners, one, where they can find you on social media, and then two, obviously they need to go check out the Floating Collective, go stream that, go check out the Long Story Short record. What else do you want them to go listen to?
Man, I think you nailed it. Thank you so much for having me. What a pleasure to get to meet you guys and chat a little bit about music that I love, a guy that I love being associated with and knowing. So it's been such a pleasure. Check out Brendan Mayer if you feel inclined. Floating Collective on all the major streaming services and such. If you want to follow me on the social media stuff, that would be great too. Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. You can find me by typing my name in. And the next thing we're doing is with my fantastic dad, Peter Mayer. We're calling it the PMG2, which is a little double meaning. We've got Peter Mayer Group and Pandemic Music Gathering. So this is the second one of these we've done. You can find all the info on social media, but we're doing 3 weeks, three Thursdays in a row. It's that fantastic piano player I was telling you about, Chris Walters, is the first one on the 25th. of February, so a week from tonight. Then I'm the following Thursday, I think March 2nd or 3rd. And then my dad's the following one. So check it out. We're going to be playing a bunch of music with some really great guys.
That's awesome, man. Can't wait to check it out. And I'll echo Adam's thoughts, man, before we close this up. Thanks again for being here. It was an incredible experience for us. I'm glad you had a little bit of fun, or at least said you did. That means a lot. So, man, just thanks again.
Absolutely. It was great. You guys are wonderful. We'll see you down the road.
You bet.
Yeah, thank you, guys. This has been another episode of Under 40 Victims of Faith, obviously a Jimmy Buffett podcast. If you want to be featured as an Under 40 Victim of Faith, be sure to send us an email at under40pod@gmail.com. Check us out on social media at under40pod. And fins up, guys. Hope you have a great rest of your week.